Welcome to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman, helping you unpack the economic headlines and providing real money solutions.
Hey, welcome to a Restoring America. We're watching the United States of America. We're like a new home improvement project. We've got a new president in the White House, and we're rebuilding and restoring and gutting what we need to gut and preparing. You know, we're returning to a free speech in America, too. I mean, we've seen dramatic changes just from the announcement of President Trump, and now as he enters office. Facebook, for example, said, we're going to stop censoring your speech. We're going to let people, if you can say it in Congress, if you can say it on television, if you can say it at the grocery store, you ought to be able to say it on Facebook. And so they've gone from censoring to a community notes to where you can say, hey, I don't believe that's true. And you can put up your comments even on the comments, which is free speech. It's a free town. So we've got so many good things happening after a long period of darkness. We're seeing a return to the principles of our founding. And, you know, why is that important? Well, it's important because free speech allows every other freedom that we have. And yet we've had a political movement that's been intended to squelch free speech. Both sides of the aisle, this is both Democrats and Republicans, have tried to silence us and not let us think what we want to think and speak what we want to speak, which is so contrary to the founding of the United States of America. Strong voices were made silent. Recently, I reconnected with my friend Jim Simpson. He's the author of books. He's a brilliant thinker. And he was one of the strong voices that they tried to silence. And now he's able to speak out again. And we're happy to bring it. He's the author of the book Manufactured Crisis. Now, this is the guy that brought to Glenn Beck this concept known as the Cloward-Piven strategy, which if you've heard of it, you're like, wow, he's the guy that brought that to Glenn Beck. But if you haven't heard of it, you're going to learn about it, how dangerous and insidious it was, what we need to do to fix it in this massive restoration project that we have. It was basically a Marxist totalitarian effort combining diverse ideologies like the red-green axis, you know, radical Islam and everything else, ultimately with the purpose of enslaving us. And good news is we've got a new day dawning here in America, a restoration project, and we've got the great Jim Simpson with us. Welcome, Jim.
Hey, Kevin. Great to be with you. I hope I can live up to that introduction.
Hey, how did you get into all of this? I mean, you're a bright guy, but how did you end up writing on these, you know, seemingly obscure topics at the time, but then they became headlines just a few years after you wrote about them?
Yeah, well, you know, really, it's because of my economics. You know, I studied economics. I got a master's degree in economics. I taught economics at the University of Delaware for a little while. And it fascinated me why anyone would be interested in promoting communism or socialism. Because as an economic system, they're obvious to a first-year econ student as unworkable. They're just nonsensical, frankly.
Well, the incentive nature of humanity is squelched, in a sense.
Absolutely.
Except that it was incentives that are the reason why, right?
Yeah, exactly. No. And as I write in my books, you know, they talked about this great utopia where everybody would share everything. In the meanwhile, they used that as a pretext to take power and then steal all the wealth from everybody else so they could live high on the hog. And that's really, at the base of it, that was their motivation. Well, to get power and wealth.
You can see that in Animal Farm, where you see the pigs are more equal than others. They take all the power and all the, and they become worse than the farmer, right?
Right.
But you wrote this great book, Who Was Karl Marx? And you explain, I learned from you that Karl Marx was not a good guy that cared about other people. He was a reprobate, degenerate, bad guy who hated himself and hated everybody else with satanic influence, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about Karl Marx and what you uncovered when you studied his background.
He was, well, first of all, and this is key because it's true for most of the well-known leaders of communist movements. That's Mao, the Castro brothers, and pretty much every other communist country is run by people who, in their youths, were basically spoiled brat rich kids. And that was Karl Marx. His father was a very wealthy attorney, and he showered money on him when he was in college. His allowance was larger than 95% of the average income, or of the average income of 95% of Germans' people at that time.
Wow.
And
so he was a top 5%er, yeah, just from his parents' allowance.
Allowance.
Yeah.
But of course, he couldn't hang on to it. His mother said, you know, instead of worrying about capitalism, Karl ought to just try practicing it every now and again. And he never bathed. Mm. His mother used to harry him weekly to change his underwear. And she said, instead of changing the world, Karl ought to just try changing his underwear.
Is that true?
Yes, true. And this was written by a sympathetic author to Karl Marx. And she wrote out all of his faults. I mean, he was a philanderer, and two of his daughters committed suicide, and a son-in-law. Three of his children died of malnutrition, and while his wife was running around trying to find a coffin for one of them, he hired this secretary who was described as, you know, buxom, but otherwise useless, but he needed a secretary to keep up appearances, despite the fact that his kids were starving. And so this was the kind of person he was. He spent all of his life pilfering money off of his partner, Friedrich Engels. And Engels, in turn, was another wealthy son of an industrialist who stole money out of their petty cash account to give to Marx. And Marx spent his life hovering over ailing relatives, waiting for them to die so he could find out what he would get.
So this is the great Karl Marx.
Great Karl Marx.
Who supposedly cares about people and wants everybody to have fair and this great utopia. He was a reprobate, evil, and I've heard from many Satan worshiping.
Yes.
Terrible human being, yeah. And communism is built on the idea of envy. It is built on the idea of violating the scriptures,
yep.
And it's anti-Christ in that it literally denies the existence of God on purpose.
Actually, and a very good point, he was not an atheist. He very much believed in God, but as he wrote in his poetry, he wanted to be equal to God.
Oh, that sounds like Lucifer, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And in fact, in my book, Karl Marx, I point out the fact that it's very similar. His poem is very similar to how Isaiah described Lucifer.
Wow. Well, others have written, like Voice of the Martyrs, Richard Wurmbrand, and others have written on Marx and Satan. But you've got a great book, Who Was Karl Marx? Well, all right, we're going to talk today about some of that history, but I want to get into what we're seeing happening right now in regard to, for example, the Cloward-Piven strategy.
Right.
Now, are you the guy that took that to Glenn Beck?
I am. But I have to give credit, really, it was from David Horowitz.
Yeah.
He put it up on his website. And, you know, he's so used to all this radicalism. To him, it's nothing to just throw up something like that. When I read it, it was revelatory to me because it explained everything that the left was doing.
Well, David Horowitz came from a Marxist background himself,
he
and
did.
He recognized how dangerous that was. All right, we're talking with Jim Simpson. He's the author of multiple books. Who Was Karl Marx's One? Manufactured Crisis is the current book, and you can get more information about that. I think it's on Amazon. You can get that. We're going to need to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking more with Jim Simpson, and I want to dive into exactly what the Cloward-Piven strategy is, how effective it's been, and what we ought to do about it.
Welcome back to Pirate Money Radio with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and we're talking with Jim Simpson, who's the author of a book, Manufactured Crisis, and also Who Was Karl Marx, and several others. He's a brilliant guy, an economist by background, and he studies and understands that communism is a failure. It's such a failure, and it was so rejected by the American people. There's no way we would ever adopt communism. We were rooting it out. Cleon Skousen, a man I knew, wrote The Naked Communist. They had to sneak it in, and Jim, tell us about how they've been sneaking communism in and then bring in the Cloward-Piven strategy that you introduced to Glenn Beck.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's nothing new. The crisis strategy, as it's been called, is essentially the entire Marxist program. Everything they do is designed to bring our country to interminable crises. And then they step in and offer the solutions.
Wow. And of course, sounds a little bit like pandemics and some other things we've been through recently.
Many things. And so they offer the solutions, and the solutions, of course, magnify the problems and make the crises worse. And in my book, Manufactured Crisis, I quote Lenin. And I can't say unless I read it directly, but he said, magnify all these crises. And if you can't find a crisis, create one. And if you can't create it, convincingly tell people that it exists.
Wow.
And then
sounds like climate change.
Yeah. And then provide the solutions and blame all of the problems on the other side, provide the solutions, and those solutions will offer more crises that we can continue to promote until the capitalist society collapses. Now, that was Lenin in about 1917 or so.
Are you sure that wasn't Rahm Emanuel in about 2010?
Yeah. Right. Well, even Joe Biden said, and I quote him in the book, that crisis is an opportunity to make changes that we couldn't make otherwise.
Yeah, no, they look forward to crisis. So Cloward-Piven, though, that's a very specific, determined name. And and Daniel Horowitz came up with this, wrote it. You saw it, and you said, this is serious. And you took it to Glenn Beck, who's probably, I've got right here, The Roots of the Tea Party's Conspiracy Mania, March 26, 2010, from CBS News. So they were blaming the Tea Party for a conspiracy. It's not even true. It's just a conspiracy. And it's created a mania. What were the things that were being said in 2010 that they were objecting to as patently false?
Yeah. Well, let me just first make the point. When you introduced us this morning, you talked about the importance of free speech. It's not free speech. The left has been able to speak freely forever. They can say whatever they want. They don't object to free speech. They object to the truth.
Okay.
And that's what we say.
It's a war on the truth.
It's a war on the truth because they know if people hear the truth, they don't have a chance in hell.
Well, Jesus said, you shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free.
Right, exactly. So I wrote an article in 2008 called Barack Obama and the Strategy of Manufactured Crisis, and that article went just ridiculously viral. It went crazy. And Glenn Beck, and then I began to write a succession of articles, and Glenn Beck's producer contacted me and wanted to learn more about it, and I gave them a bunch of information. And then he turned that into a series of shows on that very subject. And he went into great depth, and we had
so and what kind of things was he predicting would be happening? What were the big scary things?
So here it is. The Cloward-Piven strategy is a strategy to overwhelm the government with problems that will lead ultimately to its collapse. And then in the aftermath, they provide, again, the solutions.
With them in charge?
With them in charge, of course. And so the first one was welfare. And most people don't know this. Richard Cloward and Frances Fox Piven were a married couple. They were both, at the time, teachers at Columbia University. They were both radical socialists, radical, like Trotskyite radicals. And they posited that the Great Society, Johnson's Great Society, had just been founded with massive increases of welfare, which, by the way, the Great Society was a title that Johnson stole from Graham Wallace, who was a British socialist who wrote a tract on the Great Society in 1914. So that's an interesting
It
part.
Is. And he did this war on poverty where they spent $30 trillion in the right. war on poverty,
right.
which is remarkably close to the federal debt.
Right, right. And what has it done? It's just made things worse. Here's the thing. The entire Great Society was the brainchild of Richard Cloward. Most people don't know that, but that was in his obituary in the New York Times.
Wow.
He is credited with the inspiration for the Great Society. Now, here's the thing. So Cloward and Piven's plan, and they wrote this out in a very explicit Nation magazine article, where if you got every beneficiary packed onto the welfare rolls for every single benefit, the government couldn't possibly keep its promise, and it would be overwhelmed by the demand for services and would collapse. And in the aftermath, those people who had become dependent on those services would riot in the streets. And Cloward and Piven's answer was a guaranteed annual income, which in today's dollars would be between $40,000 and $80,000 per family of four. Now think of this. They were planning on using welfare to overwhelm and collapse the system and then propose something that's even more expensive.
Yeah.
So is that going to fix anything?
Modern monetary theory is right. how it fixes it. They just print the money like Zimbabwe and Argentina and everybody right. else, and ultimately that would collapse.
The whole thing collapses.
But
and that's the real goal.
You know, what's interesting is they did that to the minority communities in America under the Great Society. They ruined families. I have friends who said, I grew up in a neighborhood of all African-American black families where there were great family structures, a husband, a wife, kids, they were all working towards education and improving themselves. And then the Great Society hits. And the next thing I know is the daddy's gone. The daddies are all out of the house and the mom, you know, there was that push. But that wasn't enough for Cloward Piven because America survived that. So they had to go to an immigration strategy, which is Milton Friedman said it so beautifully, and I'll paraphrase phrasing, but what he said was, is you can have open borders and you can have a welfare state. You cannot survive both.
Yeah.
and that's exactly what so what you described as the Cloward Piven strategy is let's meet them at the border. We'll relocate you in America. Here's your free cell phone. Here's your stipend. We'll put you up in a hotel. We'll do this. That's how you bankrupt America. And that's what America reacted to. That's part of what America reacted to in this last election.
Yeah, no, a big part of it. But I think it was really sort of a collection of all of the different things that have been going on. I mean, from the sexualization of children in school to the free speech issue and especially the open borders issue. But so all of those things combined woke people up finally to this thing that they have been trying to do for 100 years. And now we're finally seeing it and the worm is turning.
Yeah,
and it's turning not only in the United States, it's turning all over the world.
Like Canada?
Canada. We just had Justin Trudeau
resign.
And we have in Argentina, that beautiful new leader in Argentina, in Italy.
In LA, yep.
And so things are really moving.
Europe, the governments are not surviving that mass immigration.
Oh, no. Oh my gosh. No, and Britain, and you know, the thing is, I knew in 2015 when they initiated that massive migration, and I have a whole chapter on immigration in the book, that was initiated by Angela Merkel of Germany, who is not a West German social democrat or Christian Democrat Party conservative. She was a Marxist.
Yep.
She was an East German communist youth leader. And when the wall fell, she moved left, moved into the West and insinuated herself into politics. And she worked with Putin to open the borders and create that massive migration. And I knew if we had an election in 2020 that put a Democrat in power, that we were going to have the same problem, because that was a dress rehearsal.
No, there's no question. This is Trevor Loudon-esque, you know, our friend Trevor Loudon, who studies these things and the history of these things. In so many ways, it all comes down to money. It really does.
It's always.
Now, there are only three things you can do with your money. You can give it, you can spend it, you can invest it. Here at Pirate Money Radio, we work to explain solutions that support all three areas in a way that promotes liberty, security, and values. Patriot Mobile, a mobile phone company, supports the Pirate Money Radio program. Patriot Mobile uses U.S. carriers, including AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile, and operates on both Apple and Android phones. More information about the Economic War Room and Patriot Mobile is available at piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. That's piratemoneyradio.com/AFR. And, you know, it's been side by side that I went to AmFest with Charlie Kirk, and Patriot Mobile was there, and they've been helping us spread the message of liberty, security, and values. And that's what we want in America.
Absolutely.
And it is the opposite of what the communists want. They want no liberty except for themselves. They want no security. They want these manufactured crises so you always feel insecure, and they want to destroy your values, because if you destroy the family values and Judeo-Christian values, that's how you usher in this Marxist hell. It's not utopia, I hate to use the word, but it's designed by Lucifer and intended as hell. All right, Jim, we're going to need to take another break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about manufactured crisis, and let's talk about some of the headlines that we see happening with the new Trump administration and some of the things, areas that we're going to have to focus on, or we're going to have a very real crisis. We've got a national debt that is spiraling. We've got to get that under control. We'll be back with Jim Simpson right after this break.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
You know, it's clear in the scriptures, it's clear in history, and it's clear in today's reality that there are two sides to this battle. It's a spiritual battle. It really, truly is. You know, we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers, the rulers of this present darkness. And we stand for liberty, security, and values. Jesus stood for liberty. He talked about it. He came for our liberty. And so we're talking with Jim Simpson. He's the author of the book Manufactured Crisis. And I saw a YouTube video that kind of explains what we're dealing with. And so if we could listen to that on radio, we're going to play it here in the studio. Jim, we're going to play that video that you've got, and then let's talk about it. Go ahead and roll the video.
Few could have imagined 10 years ago where we'd be in America today. We are confronted on all sides by interminable crises that threaten the very fabric of our nation. From a border flooded with millions of migrants from all over the world, to a fentanyl crisis killing more American youths every year than the past three wars combined. Radical transgender activism and other cultural insanity has pushed more youths to commit suicide than at any other time in history. It seems as though the world is rapidly coming unglued, but it is actually a diabolical plan that has been operating for over 100 years and is now showing its face.
Now, that's the introduction to Manufactured Crisis by Jim Simpson. If you want to learn more, you can go to Amazon, or is there another place, Jim, to find information on your new book?
Yeah, my archive page is crisisnow.net, crisisnow.net, and it has links to both my Manufactured Crisis, Karl Marx book, and the Red-Green Axis book, plus all my archives of most of my articles going all the way back to 2005.
Okay, say it again, the website.
Oh, sorry, crisisnow.net.
For more information about Jim Simpson, Manufactured Crisis, crisisnow.net. All right, in the short video, the YouTube, it talks about basically how you destroy culture. Mm-hmm. Essentially, yep. You destroy it economically, you destroy it
socially,
all of that.
Morally.
Now, there was a manufactured crisis, and it's led to a real crisis.
Yeah.
The real crisis is when you have kids killing themselves, when you have fentanyl coming across the border, when you have the economy going into, you know, oh, you're an economist. How do you survive a $36.4 trillion debt?
Yeah.
So talk about it a little bit. What struck you when you wrote the book Manufactured Crisis, and what kind of things should we be doing now? We've got a new administration. How do we fix this?
Sure. Okay. Well, there's a lot of things we can do. I mean, we've talked about welfare. In my book, it's one of the longest chapters. I have an extensive list of all the things that we can, should, and actually really have to do. We have to correct all the problems with the voting system. We need to get real voter ID. We need to reform, if not abolish, federal welfare. You know, federal welfare
Let's go back to the real ID. You know, it's funny. You can't get on an airplane without an ID. You can't check out a book from a library without an ID. You can't buy beer at the supermarket. Not that we're buying beer, but you can't without an ID.
But see, here's the problem, and this is what everybody does. You're assuming the other side is being rational in their arguments, but they are deliberately irrational in their arguments. I mean, they say everything that's the opposite of the truth. There is a purpose, a method to their madness, and it is literally to drive us all crazy and detach us from any sense of reality. I mean, men can get pregnant. You know, men can get pregnant and lactate. You know, these things are absolutely nuts.
They are nuts. So, and even with that one on the ID, the statement is made that it's racist to require an ID, and then they go and justify that by saying that if you're a minority, you couldn't possibly be smart enough to have an ID. I mean, it is the epitome of racism to say it's
to
racist.
Say these things. Yeah, of course it is. And they know that when they say it. They know that people are going to say, well, that's a racist thing to say. They don't care. They throw it all out there to anger us and confuse us and keep us in that state
if they
of
can
constant
silence us,
agitation.
If they can silence us, can I say this? I don't know if it's okay to say this. Maybe it's wrong to say. You know, I've got friends that go to other countries and friends that live in other countries, and they will tell me, you know, it's amazing how unracist. What's the opposite in America that we really are?
You go
to other countries. You go to Europe, and in France, they're making fun of the Germans and the British and the Indians and everybody else. You go to any other country, all these enlightened countries, and they attack people. But America is a great melting pot where we accept people from all backgrounds. Yep. I mean, Nigerian Christians come here, and they're among the most successful, wealthy Americans that exist, despite the color of their skin, as if the color of skin has anything to do with it.
Right. No, absolutely true. Absolutely true. And you know, I have a chapter titled Weaponizing the Poor, the War Against Black America. And that's really what Black America has faced since the 1920s. For example, the NAACP, you know, the most famous, well-known black organization was founded by white socialists. The only black on the staff was W.E.B. Du Bois, who was a communist.
Absolutely, yeah.
The only one. And so...
You have, like, I grew up in Tulsa, Oklahoma. My grandparents
would
tell me about Black Wall Street and how it was more prosperous than the regular city of Tulsa until the Ku Klux Klan Democrat came in and literally wiped them out over trumped up. So it's so
insanity.
It is insanity because emerging from the Civil War and the end of slavery, America was on a tremendous path until they started creating racial agitations rather than, you know, I believe in the Civil Rights Movement. I think the Civil Rights Movement was fantastic. Most people don't realize Civil Rights Movement was a Republican-led movement.
Right. Well, you know, in 1952, Bertrand Russell, the socialist, wrote a book where he said, future social psychologists will study ways to convince school children that snow is black. And through this study, they will discover four things. One, that the biggest object to achieving that goal is the nuclear family. And second, that they have to be younger than 10. If they're older than 10, it's too late to indoctrinate them. Third, they would be benefited if they learned songs that they just repeated mindlessly over and over again. And so this he wrote this in 1952.
Wow.
And this is what's happening. Maybe not snow is black, but men can be pregnant. There are 57 genders.
Yeah, you were born and you were born with a male body, but you really are a female.
Right.
And all that. And so that's why we got to grab them under the age of 10 and then change them permanently, ruin their lives.
Ruin their lives.
Permanently. You know, and we see that. And then the Black Lives Matter movement, all of that, it is now somewhat of a distant memory because it happened during the midst of COVID, but it's largely peaceful protests, burning down cities. And we were, you know, and all of that, if a black police officer happened to enforce the law against it was somehow racist.
Yeah, right. Of course.
I mean, all of that. Do Black Lives Matter? Absolutely, Black Lives Matter. White Lives Matter. Every life, regardless of your skin color, matters because God made us all.
Right.
But this notion that we've got to riot in the streets or whatever, it's just a part of that Marxist principle. Isn't
it? Yeah, no, it's all really part of the whole strategy. I mean, Black Lives Matter just took Cloward and Piven to the next step. You know, they didn't wait for the end of welfare to riot in the streets. They waited for some pretext, any pretext. And George Floyd was a perfect pretext. Although, in fact, Derek Chauvin was conducting what is considered a standard practice for somebody who is showing the effects of fentanyl poisoning. It does not cut off your breathing. It does not cut off your blood flow. It just relaxes you. That's what it's intended to do. He died of a fentanyl overdose. He had taken 3 to 4 times more than the fatal amount needed. That's what killed him. But this was a perfect pretext for the left, especially Antifa, and Black Lives Matter to go on the offense.
Which has led to, I mean, very real, you think, well, I don't have anything to do with that. Guess what? It's impacting you because it's led to the DEI and the ESG that have been forced onto corporations. Now, they're backing away from that some with Trump coming in. But the whole notion of DEI, we had a brilliant lady on, I think it's Angela Burnett, who worked with Vivek Ramaswamy in his campaign, and she's a brilliant woman, and she was talking about how she grew up and the impact that it's had. And then we had another lady from National Center who said, I hate DEI because people always assume I'm there because I'm a black woman.
Yes.
And she said, and yet I was at the top of my class. I'm a better accountant than anybody else I work with.
Right.
And I always get dinged for that. It's terrible to humanity to do those principles.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, ESG is just applied to investments, the three E's of sustainability, economy, social equity, and environment. But applied to investments, it's environment, social, which is
social justice.
Social justice or equity, and then replacing economy with government. It's a slick little way to ease government into the entire process. But sustainability itself, as they define it, would be required to have socialism.
Yeah, well, we believe in liberty, security, and values. And that's the America I know and love. That's what God has given us. And we'll be right back after a break with Jim Simpson.
Pirate Money Radio, helping you give, spend, and invest in ways that align with liberty, security, and values. Welcome back with your host, Kevin Freeman.
Yeah, and I'm here with Jim Simpson, the author of Manufactured Crisis. Jim, right before the break, I was mentioning two ladies that we'd interviewed on Pirate Money Radio and Economic War Room. One, I said Angela Barnett, it's Kathy Barnett. Brilliant woman, and she ran Vivek's part of his campaign. Phenomenal lady, and then Donna Jackson is the woman that is the accountant. She's brilliant, and yet she has to deal with this whole notion. Well, you're only here because you're a black woman, and you know she stands up and said, "We've got to." DEI must DIE is basically we've got to get rid of that because it dehumanizes people.
Yeah, yeah.
It puts us into buckets. And that's the whole point of Marxism, isn't it really?
It really is. It's a control thing. It's all about control.
So they can be in charge and so they can live off the largesse of
everybody
until they burn it all down, until it all fails.
Until it all fails. And the funny thing is, it will all fail and they will collapse along with everybody else. So, you know, destroying America, which is when they say we want to destroy capitalism, what they're really saying is they want to destroy America because America is the heart of capitalism.
The shining city on the hill.
Shining city on the hill. They destroy America, they're killing the golden goose. And that would create the kind of depression it would create if our economy was destroyed, because our economy supports the economy of the entire world.
And yet the Chinese, who wrote the book Unrestricted Warfare, they talk about the plan to destabilize America. And guess what? It ends with street riots and a political crisis.
Yeah,
that is their combination method. It talks about electronic attacks on the infrastructure. It talks about destroying the power grid.
Yep.
But it ends with street riots and political crisis. So they were cheering, if not funding, the Black Lives Matter riots.
Oh, yeah. No, and they were. Yeah, we know they were. They were cheering. They were leading. They were. They were training Black Lives Matter activists in Houston. We know about that.
And what the end of that would be? Yes, the world economy of ultimately what you do is you take that golden goose and you cook it and eat it, and that's what they would do. And then you starve because you have nothing left. But that's Satan. I'd rather burn it all down. I'd rather serve in hell. I'd rather rule in hell than serve in heaven.
Right.
Kind of thing.
And, absolutely.
You know, so we've seen this play out. We've seen American politicians literally sell out our nation. I remember as a young man in high school and college with Jimmy Carter, who just passed away, and God rest his soul. I trust that he was a Christian, and I hope that he's in heaven, but I'm telling you, the guy died at 100. He did so many damaging things to this country, one of which was giving away the Panama Canal, right. Something we built with our money and our blood.
Yes, lots of blood.
So here, this is even New York Times. Trump's falsehoods aside, they can't just say it. Take that sentence out. New York Times says, China's influence over global ports raises concerns. That's the understatement of the century.
They've been running it since the Panama Canal was given to Panama. They bought the concessions at each end of the Panama Canal within, I think, a year or two of it being turned over to Panama, and they've been running it ever since. And to think that that's just, maybe just be a little bit of a problem that the New York Times just happens to notice in 2025 is, that's just a striking example of how our media has disserved our nation.
Oh, there's no question. And we need some solutions. We have a Trump administration, and guess what? President Trump says, hey, let's take a look at that, because we, in the treaty, in the agreement that where we handed it over to them, if it's ever in our national interest, if our national interest is being threatened, we have a right to take that back.
Absolutely.
So I hope that the what do you think the Trump administration should focus on first, and what should they be doing?
Well, of course, they need to look at the economy. But, we were in a similar situation during World War II, the deficit, or the debt rather, was 125% of our gross national product. And that's about what it is today. And we grew out of it with no problem after World War II. But that was largely, of course, because we were the only functioning economy. All the other ones were wrecked. And so we got just enormous amounts of business. But there are other ways that our economy can be stimulated, and President Trump has already articulated many of those. For example, raising tariffs on other countries to give us, an equal playing field, because this whole idea of free trade, it hasn't been free trade. It's been open borders trade. The other countries get free trade with us, and we have to pay massive tariffs to get our stuff over to other countries so it never goes anywhere.
So fair trade.
Fair trade
is one thing that we can do. Reducing regulation is another one. I mean, you're an economist. I heard some statistics that the average American income, if we kept regulation at 1950 standards, the average family income would be over $300,000 today. I mean, people have no idea. Yeah. Auburn University study said that every bureaucrat job created literally takes away 138 private sector jobs.
Wow.
And all we've been doing in government has been our whole economy. All the unemployment reductions have all been built around the idea of adding in the government sector.
Yeah, no. And people are overpaid. And the first Trump administration, he was the first administration in a long time, maybe ever, to actually reduce the number of regulations in the Federal Register. That was an amazing accomplishment. And, because there are always regulations growing, and other presidents, Republicans, have perhaps, like Reagan and Bush, perhaps slowed the growth of those regulations. But Trump actually cut regulations out of the Federal Register, and he needs to do a lot more of that.
That's a growth strategy that would spark our economy in major ways.
Yep.
Producing domestic energy will help. The whole DOGE notion of cutting back and
eliminating
excess nonsensical government.
Yeah. Oh, so much of that could be done. And so much of that could be done. And it's so good that we have Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy to do that, because they're both brilliant. But Elon is amazing.
If we did that, and this is something that we all need to understand, If government grows faster than the economy, you rack up debts. If government grows slower than the economy, you reduce your debt.
Right.
And so the notion is pretty simple. It's like, you know, how do I lose weight? Well, you eat less and you exercise more, right? So if we can ramp up productivity and we can ramp up, reduce regulation to allow more growth, if you just cap the growth of government, capping the growth of government, so it has to grow at 1% slower than the economy.
Right.
So the government budget goes up, it's allowed to go up, but it has to go up 1%. We solve the debt problem in not too long a period.
Right. Yeah, but I think, you know, so many government agencies, they're unconstitutional. I mean, the entire welfare program, when FDR federalized welfare, that was unconstitutional. And people think, well, oh, if we don't have federal welfare, there wasn't anything before, there won't be anything left. That's totally untrue. There was always welfare. It was managed by state and local government, and importantly, by churches. And one of the big factors that has led to the decline of churches started when FDR took that responsibility largely out of their hands and centralized it in the federal government. So it was no longer, you know, a religious activity, a charitable activity, but instead it was turned over to the government so that they could have more power and control. And, of course, FDR and Cloward and Piven acknowledged it, FDR and both Johnson knew that centralizing welfare and expanding welfare would create blocks of people who were addicted to that welfare and thus reliable Democrat voters.
You know, it's a political strategy, it's an economic strategy. It's interesting that you point that out because my friend Kelly Shackelford is fighting for churches that want to help feed people and house people, and the government's made it illegal in many places where the church can't actually do this. This is a war on your religious liberty and your ability because the government can't have that. It's interesting, Jim, you brought up the Constitution. You said many of these agencies aren't constitutional. So one of the answers is, the bottom line true answer is, we need to return to the Constitution and go back to what the Constitution is doing. The second one that you brought up was the role of churches, which is the role of faith and prayer and asking God back into our nation.
Yes.
How many of our ills would be fixed if the government was told you are limited by what the Constitution says, this is all you can do, and we told the people, you ought to pray to God and you ought to ask God for his blessing on America. How many of our ills would be fixed with those two simple thoughts?
Absolutely, and in fact, I make that point as my number one point in solutions is that we as a nation have to return to God. You know, God gave us a choice. We can believe in him or we can go our own way. He says, okay, you can go your own way. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
And this is where we are as a result.
Yeah, Moses comes down. I lay before you life and death, a blessing and a curse. Choose. And we have a choice. The choice is Marxist manufactured crisis. The author is Jim Simpson. You can learn more. What's your website?
Crisisnow.net.
Crisisnow.net. Look, we have an opportunity, a new dawn in America. It's an opportunity for us to work together. Look, if you have questions, if you have comments, reach out to us at afr@piratemoneyradio.com. You can listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. This is Kevin Freeman from Pirate Money Radio. Till next week.